You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Culture is the culture. It's 4 to 6 A to B, competitive excellence, and the brotherhood. The plan to win has never changed. So the culture here and the plan to win is always going to be here at Ohio State.
Welcome back to 4 to 6 with A&B, your Ohio State podcast brought to you by The Athletic. This is Bill Landish, joined by Ari Wasserman. Ari, I felt like I lost 15 pounds standing in the Woody Hayes Athletic Center on Wednesday as I watched Ohio State's first camp of the summer, and I'm wondering if you missed those days at all.
I miss hanging out with you, but it always seems to be. There's the two hottest days of the year, regardless of geography or where you are, or the calendar, is the first camp inside the Woody Hayes Athletic Center and the first game of the regular season.
Yeah.
Those two days are the hottest days of the year.
It was unbearably hot at Ohio State's first recruiting camp. It was actually quite nice in the beginning part of the day. There was a nice breeze. I was watching the offensive linemen and defensive linemen go at it. It's a good morning. And then it rained the hardest I've ever seen it rain in Ohio. I've lived here for almost 8 years now. I've never seen it rain as hard as it rained for about 10 minutes in the middle of Ohio State's camp. And then after that, I felt like I was in Louisiana in the middle of July. It was so hot and muggy. Unbearable. I don't know how those kids work out and that stuff. Maybe it's because they're in shape and I'm not.
No, I don't think being in shape really. I mean, I think maybe we're more prone to sweating.
Certainly more prone to sweating. Yeah, that's true.
I actually say this all the time, and I know that everybody makes a joke because like, it's a dry heat. But, like, I think I grew up in the hottest place in America. Like, people think that haven't visited there. I will take Phoenix heat over a terribly muggy Columbus Day or Dallas weather.
I feel that.
It gets really, really, really I feel like it's hotter in Phoenix, but it's more uncomfortable in those scenarios.
It is. I've only experienced, like, really extreme, like, desert heat one time. I was in Vegas in July for God knows what reason, and it was like 110 degrees and it was hot, but yeah, feeling like you're standing in the middle of a swamp is much worse, and that's how it felt for the second half of Ohio State's first camp.
Yeah, well, you know, hopefully you lost a few pounds.
Yeah, I think
did you feel a little skinny this morning when you woke up? You know, his pants fit a little bit better.
I woke up feeling skinny and sore because I was on my feet for like 8 hours and my body can't handle that anymore either.
Where are you going out of town? You're going out of town this week somewhere?
Yes, I'm going to Philadelphia. My grandmother turns 80 on Saturday. So,
damn! Congratulations!
I think it's a surprise, but she doesn't listen to this podcast, so we're okay. So, we're going out there, and we're going to have a nice dinner on Saturday. Looking forward to it. You want to come?
That'd be great. You have time to take me on the food tour? I just got a fraud alert from my my credit card.
That was me.
It says Papa's Pizza, so you would think that I did that, but I didn't. So I'm starting to freak out, and it was for $20.56.
Papa's Pizza. I've never heard of Papa's Pizza.
Papa S Pizza. Fraud alert. Did you just attempt a $20.56? What pizza place?
Oh, 10:22 a.m. That's in Columbus, I think.
It is?
I think so, yeah. Papa's Pizza. Oh, no, maybe not. I feel like I've seen it before.
That's good. Now we can do the podcast while I have an internal meltdown the entire time.
It's a real place. So at least we have that. Yeah, Papa's to go pizza, fresh baked. This one large three topping pizza for $15.99 does not seem like that great of a deal. They get the cauliflower crust though.
Yeah, I guess if you're into that sort of thing.
sorry, someone's stealing your identity and buying pizza.
Yeah, I mean, I have that that thing that I pay $20 a month for that does nothing for my credit score. So I hope, you know, the like credit secure that's supposed to like stop from fraud happening. So let's just hope that they don't go to Walmart.
Yeah. Well, as you're monitoring that, why don't we also try to talk about Ohio State's first recruiting camp of the summer? Is that okay?
Okay. Yeah, yeah. I'm monitoring it.
Okay. He's monitoring it. It was an interesting day. There were a couple of 2023 offers that went out. Probably the highlight of them being Austin Novosad, the quarterback who's committed to Baylor, who we talked about a little bit, I think, on the last podcast. He showed up on his own dime as a committed player, which is always worth paying attention to. He worked out alongside Jax Leatherwood, who has a great, tremendous name, one of the best names I've ever heard. And he's like 6 foot forever. He was very tall, 6'7", I think. He worked out alongside him. Jax is a Nevada commit from California, I believe. So a kid from Texas and a kid from California flew out to Ohio State to compete for an offer. And Austin Novosad is the one who got the offer. And having watched the two work out, they did like a little kind of private workout inside the Woody for Ryan Day and Corey Dennis for maybe 40 minutes or so, then went out to the field and then threw with the receivers and DBs for 101s. And I thought the entire time watching it that Austin Novosad clearly had just a little more to him. Better zip on the ball, better footwork. He looked incredibly small next to Jax Leatherwood, but that's because Jax is 6'7", and Austin's only 6'2", 6'3". So he's not a small quarterback. He just looks small by comparison. But it's interesting, right? Like when that happens, Ari, a kid like that who's committed comes out, competes for an offer, and then gets the offer. Like I'm kind of inclined to believe now that like this is probably going to be their guy in 2023 recruiting class.
I mean, when we found out that he was going out there, I always feel like if there's a committed prospect that they are going to have pay for their own trip, especially coming from that far away, that the workout is almost a formality. Not that I don't want to see them throw in person. That's always a big deal. But the fact that Ohio State went to the lengths to get him to come throw, I think is always a sign that like this is bound to happen unless he has a terrible showing. But they've done enough study on film and seen the guy on tape and talked to him enough to know what he's got. And then they have you come throw, and they're like, okay, well, we see what we thought you are, and now you have the offer. So, like, I am not surprised to see this. The interesting thing to me about this is that, like, whenever this happens, doesn't it just kind of feel like any minute now he's going to flip? Because, like, that always seems to be the case. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, like, if it's just, like, an offer, and then you're waiting 3 months. But, like, what – and I'm sure you're going to write about him, right? Mm-hmm. I'm very curious to know like what the sales pitch is to him and like how you can convince somebody who is committed to a program that is actually pretty good to be the guy to come like fit in between 3 5-star prospects, I think is a tough sell.
I agree with that. I'm interested in that as well. I've not talked to him. I talked to him before he came out here. I've not talked to him since he can't, but I'm hoping to get him on the phone when we're recording this on Thursday to talk a little bit about that, because I'm interested in that pitch as well. I mean, he knows the deal, right? He came up here knowing what the quarterback situation is, and I think something we've talked about before, it's like, I don't know, can you convince yourself that you're better off, you know, developing for a couple of years as a backup at Ohio State than maybe having the opportunity to get it thrown into the fire right away at a program that has a little bit of a more inviting quarterback situation? And I don't know what Austin is thinking. I think he just kind of came up here looking to have a good camp, and I think that he had one, and he got his offer. And but like talking to him last week, I didn't get the impression that it was like as soon as he got that offer, he was going to flip. I think they'll probably be more pragmatic about it than that. He may even do some more camps. Who knows? This is a kid who's an Elite 11 finalist. Like, he's going to get on more people's radar. He's already committed to a Power 5 program. He has an Ohio State offer. He's going to be at the Elite 11 finals. Like, he could be flooded with offers by the time the fall comes around. It's just a matter of, like, the rate at which he processes all that and then you know, decides whether or not he wants to stick with Baylor, which is in his home state of Texas, or wants to.
And an inexplicably good program consistently.
Baylor is a very solid program, and I think a program that people think is on the rise a little bit, right? As long as who the hell's the head coach there? The guy who was the defensive coordinator at LSU, Dave Aranda, seem to have a pretty good thing going there, and they're going to be like in a different situation in a Big 12 that is probably more winnable with Texas and Oklahoma out of the picture, right?
Yeah, you know, and but then the flip of that is, do you want to go to a place that might be in a conference that's not considered Power Five in 3 years? Like, that, I mean, there's like, yeah. Mm-hmm. There is a the thing that I do find fascinating. In have we talked about? I do, and this isn't a humble brag. I'm actually embarrassed, but I do a lot of podcasts, and I can't remember what I say on certain ones. But have we talked about the Jimbo Fisher Nick Saban beef even for a minute on this show?
I don't believe we have.
So anyway, the reason why I'm bringing that up is because the thing that Nick Saban has created at Alabama that made him, that probably makes him resent the fact that he lost to Texas A&M in recruiting, is that he has built a program that has developed prospects, as the story that you wrote illustrates, better than anybody else in America, and there is an inherent value to going to Alabama as a scholarship player, right? You know, the support that you get, the coaching that you're going to get, and the likelihood, or the higher likelihood, that you're going to be developed not only into a draft pick, but into a high-end draft pick. And to me, there's a monetary value there. If it doesn't come in a duffel bag, there's still a monetary value. Would you agree with that?
Mm-hmm.
So if you put yourself in this kid's position, even if you come to a program that has all these different players, you know, before him and after him coming in as highly touted recruits, you might think to yourself, well, going to Ohio State has a monetary value from the facilities, the passion of the fan base, the level of coaching I'm going to get, the level we're competing at, and how well they've developed quarterbacks, that I might as well go take a shot. Maybe the best case scenario is I'll be better than some of the five-star players that they signed, and I will be the star quarterback there. Best case scenario. Worst case scenario is I'll still probably be pretty good. Maybe never play, but I get instructed by some of the best coaches in America at this position that will develop me in order to transfer very easily to wherever I want in a year or two. Mm-hmm. And I think that that monetary value that Ohio State has, that has nothing to do with NIL and all to do with reputation, makes it a very attractive risk for people in his position to take. And I don't know if people talk about that enough in the NIL circles. And like, if I were him, it's like, do you want to go to Baylor? Or do you want to go at Ohio State, try your best to maybe exceed expectations and become the guy? And even if you don't, you're going to get much better in the 2 years that you're there, or the year that you're there. And then, by the way, you can just go transfer to Baylor whenever the hell you want. And like, to me, I think that's an attractive option.
I think it is too. And the other thing, like, and I think we've gamed this out before, it's like, Kyle McCord's a starter next year. He could be one and done and leave. And then Devin Brown after him, he could be one and done and leave. And if you're Austin Novosad, all of a sudden you're like going into year three and you're in prime position to start. You have Dylan Raiola there too, obviously, and he's very good. But you've been in the program for 2 years by that point. Like, it's not – again, it doesn't feel unreasonable to me to like have to sit for a year or two and then become the starting quarterback at Ohio State. Like that –
like that should be like, that used to be the thing. That was right. The whole thing.
Right.
So,
and I realize it's a different landscape now than it was, you know, even three, 4 years ago. But I think maybe a more sort of pragmatic person can kind of get themselves to that point too and realize that like taking that swing is worth it, even if you might be passing up an opportunity to get on the field perhaps earlier at a place like Baylor or anywhere else, really. I mean, and it's not that Baylor, like, Baylor is a good program. Like, if starting quarterback at Baylor's, you know, they've had a first-round pick in the last 10 years, right? Robert Griffin was in the last 10 years, right? Yeah, so it's not like
– well, actually, somebody paid 3 first-round draft picks for him.
That's right. but, you know, that's a – maybe Baylor's a bad example because it's not like he's coming from, like, I don't know, UCF or something like that. But I still think it'll be an enticing opportunity for him, even if it does look quite crowded at the moment in Ohio State's quarterback room.
So I just looked this up because this reminds me. Oh, by the way, Baylor won a conference with Texas and Oklahoma in it last year. So like that, like they're a Power Five conference champion. So
yeah,
like,
no, they're good. Yeah.
I wrote a story 2 years ago about Jackson Dart, who I think a lot of people might think that outside of Caleb Williams is the best rated prospect or the most influential transfer, right? Maybe not as big as Jordan Addison or Caleb Williams, but he is definitely in the top five.
Yep.
And I went back and I looked at his chart because this kid's path reminds me a little of Jackson Dart's path as a recruit. And if you go back and look, like Jackson Dart's ranking in October of his senior year. He was rated number 300 overall nationally. And I think Novosad is 308, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right.
And then in November, 6 weeks later, he was 238. Then a month later was 103. And then he ultimately landed at 831. Or, I mean, at 69. So, like, his trajectory kind of reminds me a little bit of that. Now, he's a little bit further ahead because Dart didn't really start to see the rise until, like, the second half of his senior year. But he certainly kind of illustrates those qualities. And the fact that he's going to the Elite 11, it's kind of like, what was Drew Aller rated last year at this time? Didn't he, like, turn out to be a five-star prospect? And, like, Drew Aller, I think, was in the 300s as well before he went to that camp.
Yes.
So it's like if Ohio State wants to go into this and get a commitment from somebody who ranks like this currently, who has a lot of big things ahead of him, then I think that you can sell this to Dylan Raiola as a way of saying, you know what, we didn't know that this guy was going to blow. You know what I mean? Like, and if he blows up, then they might be able to get a 4 or 5 star. I mean, like, honestly, it's not within the realm of the possibility for him to end up as a top 50 player. I mean, it happened to CJ Stroud. This happens all the time.
Yeah, and there's, like, increasingly every year, I think, that there's going to be some kind of bump with whoever Ohio State tabs as its quarterback because they have that kind of cachet. Like, we talk about the Bama bump all the time, right? And I think there's an Ohio State bump in general, too, but especially so with quarterbacks. Now, a lot of the guys they've recruited have sort of already had that standing when they kind of got them. And if they get Austin, you know, in the next couple months, he won't have that. But I think you could see a rise there just because people value Ohio State's opinion on quarterbacks with the way they developed the position and evaluated the position.
Since I also think there's an Elite 11 bump too, Bill.
For sure.
I think just going to that event and having a good performance, or maybe just even your existence in the event, I think is a huge thing for the quarterback rankings, and they always alter very drastically after every year. So, you know, I personally think that this is exactly the type of move that Ohio State had. I mean, listen, We talked about the two things that Ohio State could do at quarterback, right? It's one, ignore it completely in the 2022 or 23 class as to not upset the five-star coming in behind him, or, you know, and address it in the portal, or try to find somebody that threads the needle that isn't too intimidating. And it's like, this might be the ideal way that you'd want to go about this, assuming that Dylan's going to be okay with it. And I assume that he will, or is at least aware of what's going on.
Yeah, I don't think Dylan Raiola cares too much about what comes in or who comes in front of him. I think he understands the deal at Ohio State that they're going to try to get a guy every year. And even if it looked like they weren't going to have a guy this cycle, even if Austin Novosad ends up becoming like a capital G guy, I don't think that does anything to derail the commitment of Dylan Raiola. I think Ohio State will probably still have to recruit him because I don't think other programs are going to stop coming after him. But I wouldn't worry much about that, about the competition being something that would set that, you know, on a course that would concern you. So, two other 23 offers that went out in or after Wednesday's camp. One was Jermaine Matthews, a cornerback from Winton Woods, who is not a very highly rated player. He's obviously in the state of Ohio, but he's ranked number 555 overall. But I don't want to be the kind of person that every time Ohio State gets a kid who's ranked low, who just says, like, whatever, he's going to Ohio State, he must be good. He had one of the better camp performances I think I've seen in my time covering Ohio State. Like, he was awesome on Wednesday. Just, like, super competitive. Like, all the Ohio State players who were out there kind of watching the one-on-one drills were, like, really into it, really hyping Jermaine up, like, lobbying for him to get an offer. And then after the camp was, like, telling him that he needs to go to Ohio State. Like, Jalen Johnson was in his ear big time. It seemed like Cameron Brown was in his ear big time. Like, I understand that the ranking is what the ranking is, but I've seen some really good corners at Ohio State, and I've seen them at different stages of development, and he looks like a kid to me who can turn into something, you know, pretty noteworthy, even if he is ranked where he is ranked right now. And he got the offer, which, and I think when that happens for a kid that's in state, means that he's probably going to end up in Ohio State's recruiting class.
Yeah, well, that's the one thing I miss. When you say, do you miss those hot days in at the camps? Watching stuff like that was always really fun because it really is a unique look into how Ohio State evaluates players in person, which I don't think you get to see very often. And when you get to see somebody actually perform at a level, You know, it's like sometimes, and I'm the biggest guilty party of this than anybody, but like I'll go to a camp. I'm going to one at TCU on Saturday. And I'll like look at the ratings and I'll apply my opinion of that person based on their ratings and when it should be the reverse. And I think a lot of times too, like that's just subconscious because you just anticipate somebody being good. So anytime they do anything remotely athletic, you just are like, oh, no crap, he's good. But like if you weren't, and you're somebody who's been around the block enough to have watched camp performances and know what it's supposed to look like. If you didn't know what he was ranked before you saw him work out, what would you think he was ranked?
Like a top 150 player.
So, you know, like if that is the evaluation, then, you know, that is what it is. So, I mean, and everybody knows my opinion about the ranking, but, you know, I also trust Ohio State's staff to evaluate properly, especially when they're in their building, you know? Mm-hmm. It's a little bit different, like, if you go and watch film and you see it. I mean, if you see them, like, working out, these coaches have a very keen understanding of what pure athleticism looks like. And I think that's the baseline fundamental thing that you need to be able to evaluate as an Ohio State coach. And there's no better place to do that than right in front of you when you're putting them through workouts. So, you know, I'm okay with it, I guess. I mean, like, I don't, like... The second I saw he got offered, and in Winton Woods is a pretty good high school program too. I feel like we went down there once a year to write about a kid when I was out there. Uh-huh. So they always seem to have somebody from that high school. But, you know, it will be interesting, Bill, that as these commitments start to rack in and it happens, like how are you going to evaluate the class as a whole will be good. Like I'm like looking forward to that because it's like, you know, we always do the revisionist history of like what classes were the best 4 years from now, and it would be interesting to be like me who would be disappointed in a class that has a bunch of middle tier players that turns out to be one of the more productive classes on the field. So, you know, I don't know, like I don't have it all figured out, but
well, it's hard, right? You're just trying to project, and the tool you use to project is the rankings, and the rankings would tell you that, you know, not every kid who's ranked in the 500s ends up becoming a stud. Sometimes it happens. Ohio State, I think, has a pretty good track record of guys like that becoming good players. But I also don't think you can just assume, right, that it's going to happen.
Yeah, and I just don't know. Like, what is it? What do you think is a successful hit rate? If you bring in 10 players into your program that are rated in between 400 and 700, how many of those players need to be productive starters in your mind for that to be a strategy worth pursuing?
I don't know, like 3 or 4. Does that seem low to you?
It seems very low to me. Yes.
I don't know. I guess like if the other half of your class is like all top 100 guys, then I think you can get away with it being like 3 or 4.
So then you would be okay with almost a quarter of your class being a miss?
No, because there's a lot of room between miss and productive starter. It's like,
yeah,
there's 25 guys in every recruiting class. All 25, they'll become starters. It doesn't mean the guys who become starters aren't valuable members of your program. You need backups.
yeah. I know. I'm just saying, like, I would want them to hit on at least half.
Yeah, you know, I guess half so, is fine. Half is one more than what I said. Yeah. So
what did I say? 10?
Yeah. I said 3 or 4. You're saying half.
Yeah. So. Okay. I mean, I guess I'm just being impatient, and maybe I'm just sounding like a typical Ohio State person, but like I want to see the fireworks.
I think they're going to be fireworks. I think you sort of have to go player by player. So let's assume that like Jermaine Matthews is going to be in Ohio State's recruiting class, right?
Do it.
So he's in the class. He's a corner. He is taking the place of whom? And it's like they don't have. If you looked at their board, there's like not a dynamite 5-star cornerback that they were after. Like I know like they would love to have Cormani McClain. They're not going to get him. Like I don't think anyone's thinking they're going to get him. So it's like, all right, they're in the running for like Christian Gray and Kayan Lee, and those guys are ranked higher than Jermaine Matthews. But I don't know. If taking Jermaine Matthews like means it might become more difficult to get like Kayan Lee or Christian Gray, it's like, all right, I think I can live with that. It's like if Jermaine Matthews was a safety and you were taking him, and it's like, oh, now we're taking him because we're not going to get Caleb Downs. Like that's a little bit different calculus, but like I think you have to sort of take him position by position, or like,
and it's like how much better is a Christian Gray who's rated number 115? How much better is he than a person who's rated where Jermaine's rated?
Yeah, I don't know. I think. You know, I think it's true that Ohio prospects tend to get ranked lower. And I think that's because there's there's a gap, I think, in between when you, like, I think a lot of Ohio prospects get evaluated during the fall, obviously, and then, like, now. And a lot of the guys who play in different parts of the country where they have spring football, I think, just have more eyeballs on them throughout the process and thus are usually rated a little higher. And that's why I think you tend to see Ohio guys rise later in the process. So at the moment, I don't know. Like, they would tell you there's a huge gap because one's in the 500s and one's in the 100s, but I don't know if that's actually true.
Yeah, and it's also, too, you've got to take into account, and this is just an implication that Ohio State's class is going to be, the majority of it's going to be like this. But if you get 10% worse at every position than what you could have, I think that over the course of an entire class, that's significant. So, like, you know, again, very alarming conversation that I'm having right now about it, and it might not actually come true. You know, I'm very curious to see how Ohio State ends up, and it's one of the top 10 storylines I have in this post that I wrote for Saturday or for Thursday on The Athletic. But it's just like, that is just in the back of my head, and we talk about it all the time, and there's a huge difference between what my worry is for Ohio State's class and then you saying, I watched this kid, and Ohio State's players watch this kid, and he's definitely an Ohio State kid. It's like, okay, I accept that. You know, like, there's got to be, like, a – you can't just revert to just, like, well, the rankings say he's not as good as somebody else, so he's no way he's as good. Like, if you saw it with your eyes, then you saw it with your eyes, you know?
Right, yeah, and I think that's the disconnect, and an understandable one sometimes. It's like you're doing a national thing. The thing you have to go on the most is the rankings and, like, other people's evaluations because you're not able to go out everywhere and see players play. But I also think, like, if you were at that camp with me on Wednesday and you saw Jermaine Matthews, you would be like, okay, this kid's a dog. Like, he's
– But I also, like, respect your opinion enough to accept it.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Like, you know, I wasn't there, so I didn't see it. But if you're telling me that this guy looked like he was rated like Ray, then, you know, and Ohio State's coaching staff knows how to evaluate players. So, you know, I'm not too concerned about it. What I am concerned about is that if their class ends up with four or five top 100 players, that's half of what they typically get. And I wonder how much of a hit rate you need to have with the remaining 15 to 17 guys in that class to not take a dip on your team in 3 years.
Certainly higher than the three or four I said, but I still think they're going to end up with like 10 or so top 100 players in this class when it's all said and done.
Yeah, and if they do, then this might be one of the more well-rounded, like, backbone classes. Because you have a nice mix of a bunch of different guys in there that can do different things, and you have some potential sneaky starting power. You have reliable backups that might be okay with that. You got a quarterback potentially that you could feel really good about, despite the fact this is an off year in recruiting that position. Like, if they get 10... I mean, 10 would be better than they didn't even sign 10 last year. So, you know, I think that they have to get to 8 where I will be satisfied. I don't know, like, if they sign 5 or 6, like, I guess it's passable. But, like what is it to you? Like, what's your benchmark of success if you're just, like, going by the ratings alone of how many top 100 players Ohio State has to get in a given class for it to be good?
I think, like, the minimum is probably 8.
So that's a high standard. I mean, that's a really high standard.
Yeah. And if they look at the average player rating too, I think is always the best indicator. And theirs is a little low right now, obviously. But I think if they end up adding, you know, the 6 or 7 more top 100 guys that I think they're going to add, or at least have a very good shot of adding, then that player average will be where you want it to be in the end.
Okay, I don't want to. Maybe I won't put you on the spot, but I'm very curious of, like, who you think they're going to add. Like, in their targets, like, who are the guys that you feel good about?
Brandon Innes, Noah Rogers at receiver. Caleb Downs at safety. So that's 3. Tacka Curtis at linebacker.
Yep.
Maybe someone like John Walker on the defensive line, or maybe like Larry Johnson pulls a rabbit out of a hat and gets someone like, I don't know, like Jason Moore maybe. I think there's someone like that, like there's probably a top 100 defensive lineman that I think will be like a Larry Johnson special in the end. Which is maybe a little bit of a cop out, but I think he has a track record that I feel comfortable saying that. So what's that? Put me at like 5.
Yeah, what about that Tamarian Parker kid too that they seem to be pretty high on?
Mm-hmm. And then, like, I don't know, like, if they get like Olaus Alanin, who's like right on the border of being top 100, like, I would count that.
You count that, yeah.
Yeah, so like Samson Okunlola, I don't know. Like, there's still nothing out there about him coming to visit Ohio
State. That's your guy, though.
He's very good. He's very good.
That's your guy. That's the Landis guy.
He is the guy. If you said you were putting together Ohio State's recruiting class right now, you could have your pick of any player in the country to add to the class, I think I'd probably pick him. And that's mostly because, like, I've actually seen him with my own two eyes, which, and it's not the case for the majority of the players that we're talking about here, but he's very good. So yeah, I don't know if that puts me at like 6 or 7, I guess, off the top of my head. There's probably more than that that I'm forgetting. But I think they're in good shape. Oh, Justice Haynes. I think they can try to get Justice Haynes out of Georgia.
Yeah, he's officially visiting Georgia this weekend.
He's officially visiting Ohio State at the end of June. That's the other thing with, like, I feel like since the, and I don't know how much this mattered. I guess there's like, there was some research that I apologize to the person who did it. I don't have their name off the top of my head. Like that actually did the research and said, like, there is a tangible benefit to having the final official visit.
Oh, really? Like, I've always wondered that.
I feel like a lot of years or in the years since, like, the summer visits have started, like, Ohio State's have been sort of like really kind of spread out, and they're like, and if there was a big visit weekend, it's always felt like it's been earlier in the process. Ohio State's big visit this year is the last weekend of June. So they're going to get the last, at least like, summer swing at a lot of these targets. Like, Caleb Downs will be here. Justice Haynes will be here that weekend.
You should apologize to Kevin Noon for stealing his whole summer swing thing.
Summer swing. They did the Southern swing.
Oh, the Southern swing. Forget Kevin Noon.
So, I don't know. I think that's interesting. Maybe that means nothing, but it seemed to stand out to me a little bit that Ohio State is getting the majority of their big time targets in for the last weekend, when I feel like in the past they've been here earlier than that, and then, like, have had to play defense. Like, if they did a good job, then, like, that kid would go to four other places, and then it would feel like Ohio State would lose a little bit of momentum.
Yeah.
Now,
that doesn't surprise me at all. It seems kind of stupid, but it doesn't surprise me.
It doesn't surprise me either. Like, I think there's the post visit glow. Like, I think that's a real thing, and sometimes people make decisions when they're in that glow. So it benefits you to be the last one, I think.
Yeah.
So, I didn't say Mateo Uiagalelei either. I think they have a shot at getting him.
Yeah, my understanding of him is that he was going to leave the West Coast. And I feel like Ohio State's the only non-West Coast team that he's still really considering, right?
Ohio State, I think, yeah, Alabama.
Call Big Dave and talk about it, or what?
Yeah, Big Dave, yeah. They were here. They were here last summer. They were here in the spring, I think they were here, and he's coming again in June. So that's a lot of time for a kid from California, a lot of trips for a kid from California to come out here. And they have a good relationships with people at Bosco. Obviously they recruit it well there. So I think that's real. I'm not saying, like, for sure I think Ohio State's going to get him.
I would love a story from you about why he's not really high in Clemson.
That'd be interesting. I wonder. Yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen anything. Big Dave is out there. I haven't seen.
He tweets a lot of stuff, man.
Yeah,
I've tried to DM him before.
Yeah, he certainly
to no avail. But
he's out there for sure.
But the reason why I said that is because he strikes me as somebody who will tell you what's up.
I think so too. I wouldn't mind. I wonder if Mateo will camp when he comes.
Yeah.
He might. I think he was here the coaches' clinic. That's when they were here last, and it was like he and Dave were like in the room as Larry Johnson was doing his thing, and it was like there were a bunch of high school coaches in the room, but it mostly felt like Larry was just doing his presentation for Mateo and Big Dave. So it was kind of funny. One other offer in 23, just quickly, Jalen Thompson, a defensive lineman from Cass Tech in Detroit.
So did you? I'm sure you're aware of this, but did you see where Wilcher is now?
I did not see where Wilcher is now. Where is he?
Thomas Wilcher is the former Cass Tech coach who was like the head coach during the Donovan Peoples-Jones, Mike Weber days, who used to be the running back at Michigan. He has.
Oh, I know where he is. Is he at Michigan State?
Yeah, he has the high school relations position at Michigan State right now, which I thought was really cool because that guy can bullshit with the best of them.
Yeah.
And he was super gracious to us. Are we allowed to tell the story, or, like, I don't know?
Yeah, I don't see why not.
Yeah, it's harmless. And you do a really good impression of it, and you have to use the words.
I actually don't remember the story. I just remember what his punchline was.
The story was, we went up to go visit him during the time where Ohio State was still recruiting Donovan Peoples-Jones. And I don't remember if there was another player in the class, but we were in Detroit for working on stories for something.
There was another. There was a defensive back. I can't remember his name, but
there was a defensive back who
I think went to Michigan.
He might have gone to Michigan. That's who we were there to really write about. We weren't there to write about Donovan Peoples-Jones.
I can't remember. It began with a J. I'm going to look it up.
Yeah, look it up while I'm talking. But after the interviews were over, because like there's two types of coach speak. There's the on the record speak, and then the second you turn off your tape recorder, the people that they turn into, which is themselves. And Thomas Wilcher was a hell of a morpher when it came from like saying the right thing publicly to just bullshitting. And we were like, all right, dude, you know, you gave us the stuff about, you know, DPJ, like where do you think he's going on the record or whatever, but like what's actually going on here? And I said, is he just going to end up at Michigan or what? And he got like agitated because he goes, you remember what he said now?
No, I still don't know how we get to the punchline. I can't remember.
Okay, right. I said, are all these other schools formalities or like what are we like? What's actually going on here? Can you give us some insight? And he goes, do you know how much money it costs to apply to college that his parents are putting out there for applications? Because apparently now applying for college costs like $300. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Maybe it doesn't. I don't know. For whatever, Thomas Wilcher made it seem like it was super expensive, and he goes, you think if he's not considering all these other schools, he's going to be wasting all of his parents' hard-earned money to apply to all these colleges for his own fun, like throwing money out the window? And then what was the punchline?
I'm going to swear, just for anybody who...
Yeah. I want you to swear. That's why I want you to say it.
Yeah, he said, do you think they would waste their own money on college applications? And then he pauses and he goes, that's loot, motherfucker.
That's hard-earned money. That's loot, motherfucker. And I thought that was the funniest thing in the entire world. And it was like, true. And then I found out that his father was a medical doctor, and it made me feel like the point was less taken later on. But, yeah. You know, because I think Donovan Peoples-Jones' dad's like a very successful medical doctor in the Detroit area. But yeah, like it was a really funny thing. And every time Bill and I talk about money, we say that to each other. Yeah. So
Jalen Kelly Powell was the other player.
Jalen Kelly Powell. That's right, man. Do you ever wonder about all the lifelong memories that you're just like not going to have in your head for when you inevitably have kids, or, you know, from your grandma's 80th birthday and all these things that you are like deleting because you have to remember these kids' names?
Yeah, that's right. When's my child's birthday? I don't know, but I know.
I don't know, but I know.
Jones is a 5-star prospect in 2017.
Yeah. But anyway, okay, go ahead. Cass Tech.
Yeah, I just thought it was interesting. They're back there. Jalen Thompson, like there's crystal balls for Michigan State. I actually did not, and I didn't talk with him. I actually didn't even watch him much at the camp, but I saw what he told some people afterward, and he said, like, Ohio State is the offer he's always wanted. So that'll be interesting to monitor. Michigan is not after him. He's a number 3 player in the state of Michigan. He's number 212 overall. I don't know, like, inside, outside, he's kind of short. He was, like, he's 6'3", so he's not, like, overwhelmingly tall for an edge rusher, but he's pretty long. And he's listed like 240 pounds, I think. So he's like a pretty well put together kid. Had a good day, and Larry Johnson offered him. So I don't think Larry Johnson's in the business of offering players he doesn't want to take if they want to commit right there. So that's another defensive lineman, I think, to add to the fold in 2023. There were some in-state offers in 2024. I'll just run through them quickly. We don't have to talk about them much. Elias Rudolph, an edge rusher from Cincinnati Taft. Garrett Stover, a safety from Big Walnut, who is Cade Stover's cousin.
Isn't that what they called you in high school?
Big Walnut?
Yeah.
Yeah. and Aaron Scott, a 4-star corner from Springfield High School. All three of those guys look like they're going to be like top 10 guys in the state in 2024, and Ohio State's in on them early. And then the other offer, the 7th offer from the camp, was Mylon Graham, who is a receiver from Indiana who had no offers. He came to camp with no offers, and then Brian Hartline offered him. So that kid's about to get a ton of offers. And then a couple other just quick notes, and then we're going to have a question here at the end we're going to wrap up with. Will Smith Jr. was there, and that was kind of my first look at him. And everyone who had seen him prior to that kind of said he kind of looked much, much better physically. He's got very much a baby face and looks significantly younger than a kid who's going to be playing college football a year from now. But I thought he looked pretty good, moved really well, was big. Had some good weight on him, it looked like, and looks like a kid who's going to be a pretty good interior lineman, or could be a pretty good interior lineman. Tyler Atkinson, who is in eighth grade, he's an eighth grader. He'll be in high school this fall. He was kicking ass, man. I don't know what this kid's deal is, where he's going to go, or if he's going to be the number one kid in the class of 2026 or not. But when they did offense defense 1-on-1s,
like, he's like 6'5", isn't he, or something?
I didn't see this kid lose. He's listed. Well, that's the thing. Like, he's listed. He's 6'3".
Well, you're there, buddy. You're up there in the heights.
He's 6'3". Like, he's not. I'm taller than he is. He, if you look at him, you're like, he's like a really well put together athlete, but you don't look at him and think like that kid is going to be an animal as a pass rusher. And then, like, obviously he was super fluid going through the individual stuff, and then in one-on-ones he just destroyed everybody. So it's like, all right, like, maybe this is what Chase Young looked like when he was in eighth grade. I don't know, but that kid's a little bit of a freak.
Yeah,
Ohio State's already offered him.
His nickname is Hightower, right?
Is it really?
No, I just made that up.
Ohio State's already offered him, and he hasn't played high school football yet, so that probably tells you everything you need to know about him. Georgia has offered him, obviously, because he's from there. I don't know. Maybe he'll probably end up going to Georgia, but I was like, whatever, there's an eighth grader here, and then I watched the workout. I was like, holy shit.
Sweet heavens to Betsy.
Yeah, sweet heavens to Betsy. This young man's good at football. And then one other guy I just wanted to mention, because he had, I kind of thought, like, an interesting day. Brian Robinson, who is a 3-star prospect from Austintown Fitch in Northeast Ohio, Youngstown area, he showed up. He camped here last year, and at the time seemed like a guy who could probably grow into an offerable player for Ohio State. And he's, you know, he's bigger, faster, stronger than he was back then. And he doesn't have an offer yet, but he worked out at the defensive line in the morning and then came back in the afternoon and did linebacker stuff for Jim Knowles. So, didn't leave with an offer, hasn't announced one as we're recording this. I think he'll probably come back and camp again to try to get one, but he seems to me like the quintessential, like, Ohio guy who's going to show up here as many times as he needs to show up to get an offer. So I just want to mention that name, so people kind of have it in the back of their minds for the class of 2024. All right. We're going to wrap up here with a 5-star Apple review question. Quickly, before we do that, I meant to say this at the top and I forgot. I put up on The Athletic on Wednesday the questions for our Ohio State fan survey. It's like 30 questions, I think. I probably went a little overboard with it, but I just wanted to...
Oh, I was looking at it, and I was like, bro, yeah, like, I'm tired.
Yeah, it was pretty long. You know, I apologize. But I have 700 responses so far. It hasn't even been up for a full day yet. So we're getting good responses, but if you go to if you're an Athletic subscriber, you can find it. Subscribe to theathletic.com/4-6. I also tweeted out at BillLandis25 a direct link to the survey, too. So if you're listening to this and you haven't filled out that survey, I would appreciate it if you would do so. And then I'll run the results later this month on The Athletic. Again, theathletic.com/4-6 is where you can get subscribed. And I just want to see where people are with kind of the state of what's going on with Ohio State football right now. Early returns suggest that y'all are happy. But there's been some interesting kind of perspective in the open-ended questions in there, too. So if you have the time to fill it out, I would greatly appreciate it. And thank you to those of you who have done so already. All right. Apple 5-star question. These two of them here came in from someone who called themselves expatriate in Western Pennsylvania. Again, if you leave us a 5-star Apple review with a question, we will do our best to answer it. Two-parter. First, he wanted us to rank the Big Ten campuses top to bottom. In terms of food scene, bar scene, and best destination, based on, like, what you can see along the way. We're not going to do all 14, but I thought we could give, like, our top answer in each category. So, what is your best Big Ten campus for food scene?
Penn State.
Really?
Every single time I go to Penn State, you've taken me to this bar that... found to be very delicious, and I always feel like whatever I eat there is delicious.
Yeah.
The only thing that I was upset about with Penn State was Permane Brothers, but that was in Altoona, Pennsylvania, and that doesn't count.
There is actually one in State College now, but yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah, but that's the one that jumped out to me, because I was like, if I could go on one Big Ten road trip, there was a pizza place there that I thought was delicious. But I'm surprised that if somebody said Arizona, I would be like, oh, my God, really? Because I went there and you get tired of the food that's on the campus for the 4 years you live there. Yeah. So maybe that's it. But, like, what was yours on that?
Rutgers, because I just, like, get to eat all the stuff that I ate growing up that I don't get to eat here. Like, Rutgers is only an hour from where I grew up, and it's, like, more or less the same. So it's not, like, it's my personal preference. You know what I mean? It's not like you go to Rutgers. I mean, it's close enough to New York that you can find good restaurants for sure. But it's like, I want to go to Rutgers.
But Penn,
like,
State also gives me some of that Pennsylvania,
yeah,
Pennsylvania vibe that you might get out there too.
Yeah, yeah. But I want like good pizza. I want like a good place to get sandwiches, and you can get that at Rutgers. So that's what I said.
But I also took Penn State's press box food into account too. I don't know if I was supposed to do that.
that's an inspired choice because it is good press box food.
Yeah.
So,
but also I think Michigan and Michigan State are very good because I think Detroit has a very underrated food scene as well.
Yes. I think there, yeah, there are, that's the thing that made this difficult is like when we go to these places, we don't like typically stay in the town, so it makes it a little harder, but there are places that are like adjacent to the college town that still have good places.
Yeah. And the thing too, that I want somebody, if you're listening to this podcast, to answer, because I've never understood this. In Detroit, there seem to be a million different places called Coney Island. Mm. And I've never understood why it's like the only city in America that has a bunch of Coney Island restaurants. And maybe it's just kind of like a regional thing, like diners are in the Northeast, or at least in Pennsylvania and New Jersey. But like, if you know the answer to that question, I'd be very curious to know.
I've also wondered that.
Tweet it at me.
Yeah, yeah. I'd like to know the answer to that as well. All right. So with that said, like best bar scene, I don't know if we have a tremendous answer for that, but what was your answer?
Madison, Wisconsin's got an incredible bar scene.
Oh, that's a good one. I didn't think I said Bloomington, but because Bloomington's pretty good too. But Madison's probably the answer.
I mean, as we got older, we didn't go out as much. We kind of just like watched football on Friday nights and like got a dinner and then just hung out in the hotel a lot of the times. Mm-hmm. But in my early 20s, the two places where I got the most messed up before the night of a game was Iowa City, believe it or not. And Iowa City had some awesome bar scenes. And Madison, Wisconsin is just beautiful. And if you get a game there where it's not freezing, I think it'd be great.
Yeah.
So those, like, to me, like, Madison, Wisconsin is the best overall trip.
I think.
But right. I don't really have any memorable food experiences there that maybe I'm forgetting. But like, what's Madison known for food?
Cheese curds.
Yeah, I know. But like, we always used to get them like in gas stations while driving into the state. Like, I don't know that I ever had like a real good cheese curd.
Yeah, I'm trying to. I don't have many. I've only been to Madison twice, once for football, once for basketball. But I don't have any real memorable beer or food experiences there, but I have drank a lot of Spotted Cow.
And Michigan is a really, really great campus, too. Like, I know the people that listen to the show aren't Michigan fans, but Ann Arbor's elite.
Yeah, and I was thinking, too, like, if you and I didn't, if we like covered a different Big Ten program and were asked this question, like, we'd probably say Columbus, right? Like, if you
Columbus, come here for a week, I was just going to say.
Course. Yeah.
Yeah, I would say the bar scene. The thing that is hard about this is that somebody's asking us about college campuses, and there's a lot of Big Ten, like Rutgers' campus is a lot different than you enjoying the foods of New Jersey. You know, like that, yes. It's like it's yes. not, and like when we go to Ann Arbor or even East Lansing, for the most part, we usually stayed in Detroit. So like we're staying in major cities, and it's like that's not necessarily what I think the spirit of the conversation is. And like Columbus and the Short North are like, the college town runs into the young professional bar scene. So I guess it's one and the same, but like the Short North is just a city bar scene. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I would consider that the Ohio State bar scene. So like, I mean, I lived in the Short North for 8 years. Like I love it down there, but like, I don't know if that is necessarily the spirit of the question, but like yeah. Also they get really rowdy the night before football games. So maybe it does.
They definitely do. Yeah. It definitely, I think you're right. It does feel separate a lot of the times, but I think on a Friday before a football game, it kind of all feels connected. And then best destination based on what you can see along the way, or at least just like best destination overall, I guess.
Penn State again.
Penn State's a beautiful drive.
It is. It's a very shitty drive if it's snowing. But I think that the driving into the Pennsylvania mountains is one of the more beautiful drives in the Big Ten. Because it's like, you got to think about it. Like, if me and Landis psycho drove to every single, was there a single place that we didn't drive together? I don't know that we ever, did we drove into Iowa together?
I think the only place we haven't driven together in the Big Ten is Minneapolis.
Okay, yeah. We flew to Minneapolis. But we drove to Iowa and we drove to Nebraska, which is insane, but we like road trips. So, funny enough, the best Marriott I've ever stayed in is in Davenport, Iowa.
Yeah. Quad cities are great. Low-key
first,
great.
The first experience I've had with a bidet.
My first and only experience I've had.
First and only, yeah. I think it's nice.
I love the Quad Cities. I stayed there. I
not,
drove the Nebraska.
No, I'm not talking about Quad Cities. I'm talking about the bidet.
Well, the bidet's nice, too. Yeah, yeah. I stayed at that.
Do you think that, yeah, it's the best Marriott, like, value-wise that you can get, I think. And I think one of our last road trips together was at that. We stayed there. Mm-hmm. And you ordered a pizza, and I was, like, falling asleep, and then you brought down the leftover pizza for me to have. Remember? That was, like, the nicest thing because I like, bet a lot of money on Sunday Night Football and lost.
Yep. I do remember that. I think Penn State's a good answer. I actually think like the drive to Maryland can be pretty nice, and also when you're in Maryland, you can go to DC and like do the DC thing.
Yeah.
So I think that's a good one too. Even though like Maryland's campus I think is terrible and there's not much going on in College Park, you can go DC. You hop on the train and go to DC, or you can drive to DC and you'll be there in like 25 minutes. So
yeah, it's like there's so many Big Ten teams that are just like adjacent to cool cities. But like when you think about it, like Minnesota's probably a really cool city that no one ever talks about too. Yep. But like when you think about like where we drove, like Ohio to Michigan is not a good drive. Mm-mm. Ohio to Purdue isn't a good drive. Ohio to Indiana isn't a good drive. Champaign, Illinois is my least favorite trip in the Big Ten.
Brutal.
Northwestern has Chicago, so that's cool, you know? Yep. And it's like honestly speaking, like if we're being honest, maybe I should change my food answer from Penn State to Northwestern because Chicago is just awesome. And we had Pequods there. Mm-hmm. So like, I should probably just change it to Northwestern because Chicago's got great food.
The problem is we've only like in my time covering Ohio State, Ohio State's only played at Northwestern one time.
Yeah, I went there twice or three times. I can't remember, but I mean Chicago's got great food. But like, does Northwestern get to harness the Chicago-ness of it?
Yeah, I think so. It's close enough.
So then it's probably Northwestern. But like Wisconsin is a beautiful drive once you get past Chicago, but it's a pain in the ass. And then Iowa is just like 800 miles of just straight highway. You get to see the world's largest gas station, which I think is cool.
Right. Iowa.
And that Nebraska. I mean, have anybody ever driven from Iowa City to Nebraska? It's quite riveting. So, like, when you actually think about like Rutgers and Maryland, like the most beautiful drive from a topography standpoint is unquestionably Penn State.
Yeah, and if you go east to Rutgers, Maryland, or Penn State, like you kind of have to drive through mountains to get there. So it's a little nicer.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's that one casino that we stopped in the middle of nowhere, which I was meaning to tell you this, Bill. I was looking through Instagram the other day, and that casino just popped up as an advertisement for me.
The one on the way to Maryland?
Yeah, what's it called?
It's called like Rocky Gap or something like that?
Yeah, Rock Gap Casino. It just like came up. I mean, I think it's a Target ad for obvious reasons, but like I do think that it was like, oh, I was like, I remember when we stopped there. I legitimately would have gone and just stayed the night there. Because I just thought it was a cool, small casino. It wasn't loud. You could gamble any way you wanted. And like it was like in a beautiful setting. Like they had a golf course and it looked out. But it was like quaint.
It's like in the mountains and like there's a big lake behind it and stuff. It's pretty nice, yeah.
And it's like, I've been to every casino in America, I think. And I don't think you see very many casinos that are like pretty and quaint like that.
Mm-hmm. I agree. That's a good spot.
All
right. And then the second question, well, more of an Ohio State football question that we'll end on.
Before we started this podcast, you said you wanted to go 30 minutes. I knew this was, that's always, it's cute when you say that.
We're at 51 minutes. All right. The question was, if Dwayne Haskins had stayed at Ohio State one more season, what impact would it have had on the quarterback room from that moment through today?
That is such a departure from what actually happened that it's even impossible for me to even visualize that.
Do you think it'd be much different now? Like, obviously Justin Fields would not have come here, but I still think Ohio State would still be the destination of quarterbacks it is now, right?
Yeah, no, but I thought he meant like the question was like which quarterbacks would be here and stuff, or like who would have been. Like to me, it's like Dwayne Haskins was the person who created the without Dwayne Haskins, Justin Fields probably doesn't view Ohio State as an appealing transfer destination. And I don't know if you can definitively say that, but like I think that's a fair assumption. Do you?
Well, yeah, and without Dwayne Haskins leaving after 1 year, like Justin Fields would not have come here. Like Justin Fields wasn't going to come to Ohio State in 2019 to be Dwayne Haskins' backup.
That's right. So like, but to me, who do you think was more definitive in making Ohio State the quarterback destination? Like, there's a difference between the person who opened the door and the person who made it the place.
I think it's Dwayne, because I think Dwayne. There was like a personal connection with Dwayne and Justin Fields that helped get Justin here. Obviously, it was that the quarterback situation was also appealing because there was no starter, but that personal connection helped in addition to how well Dwayne played. And then, like, I remember going to St. Joe's Prep and talking to Kyle McCord, like, all he talked about was Dwayne Haskins.
Yeah, well, I think that without Dwayne Haskins, that Ohio State might be having, like, in this world, they might be still having very good quarterbacks, but I think they might be more the athletic throwing second type still. But, like, you know what I've noticed, Bill? If you think about just high school football recruiting in general, and maybe this is just the evolution of the sport, but, like, back in the day, there used to be, like, dual-threat athletes that were ranked as quarterback prospects in the 247 composite rankings that, like, were just, like, crazy Braxton Miller-type athletes, right? Mm-hmm. That, you know, could throw well enough to get by in college, but, like, really were just freak freaky athletic. Quarterbacks now are freaking quarterbacks.
Well, 247 even like eliminated the dual threat tag, right?
Yeah, there's no dual threat tag anymore because it was mildly racist. And, you know, I think that it was just kind of like the whole dual threat thing, I think, was a nice way of saying this person can't throw very well. And like now it's just kind of like if you are a good runner, that's part of your tool bag of being a quarterback and we rate you for all of it. Yeah. So, like, I mean, I still didn't really understand the distinction between dual threat and pro style.
It was kind of odd, yeah.
But I look at the top 15 quarterbacks or the top 25 quarterbacks in the class, and all those dudes can throw. Like, the evolution of offense, the quarterback coaching that these kids are getting. No, I mean, a lot of these high schools have legit quarterback coaches now. You know, and it's just like, I'm very curious, and I think maybe even a spinoff question to that is like, if Braxton Miller were a senior now, like, what would he be ranked? Would he just be like a five-star athlete?
No, I don't think so, because I think, I feel like you can draw can you draw a comparison between like Braxton Miller and Caleb Williams?
I guess so. I mean, because Caleb like Williams super, is a really good runner, but Caleb Williams has a cannon, doesn't he?
But so Braxton had a strong arm, right?
I don't know.
Braxton's like arm strength.
I'm going back. I want to look because I haven't looked at this in a long time. Braxton Miller, 247 Sports. I just want to see like what his profile said. Do you remember like what his rating was?
He was like,
yeah. So he was 20. Right? He was a 5-star quarterback, ranked number 29 nationally as a dual threat. So, like, obviously, anybody who watched his high school tape and just, this guy just drips with athleticism. I don't know, like, where he would be ranked in a world where you have Arch Manning. Like if you think about, like, Arch Manning and Eli Holstein and you go watch their tape and then you, like, put it up against Braxton Miller's high school tape, it's, like, two quarterbacks that are, like, literally morphing into NFL guys in front of your eyes, and then there's like some guy like running around like crazy where nobody can tackle him.
Yeah.
And I just think it's like a different vibe to it. And I don't know, like, even if you go back and look at Terrell Pryor, like, what was Terrell Pryor's high school tape like? Oh, the guy who was 6'6" and just ran over and passed everybody and like was just literally 7 inches taller than everybody else on the field and just physically dominated everybody. Like, I don't know that there's a lot of quarterback tape like that right now. And I don't know if they're getting moved over to athlete or what, but like it just seems to me that quarterback is more of a pronounced skill set than it used to be.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Tell me I'm wrong if you think I'm wrong.
I wonder that too. Like if goes like guys like that guy or a guy like Tim Tebow, like was coming through now, like what, how would he be evaluated? Because there just seems to be such a premium on passing ability.
I feel like passing ability has absolutely taken precedent over your athleticism. But it's like if you look, and I don't know how else to say this, but like last year's top quarterbacks, the top 5 quarterbacks in the country, Drew Aller, Cade Klubnik, Connor Wegman, Ty Simpson, and Devin Brown, none of them look like Braxton Miller. Like, I mean, it's like a completely different type of player. Mm-hmm. Like on tape, if you watch them. So like I don't know. Like Braxton Miller was one of the best quarterbacks in his entire class, and there was a distinction for it now. And it's like, but what do they do with the dual threat quarterbacks that would have been under the dual category? Like, where do they go? And I mean, this might be an actually interesting story.
I'm trying to remember because I still think like the distinction I think existed still in the 2018 class. So like Justin Fields was considered like a dual threat, and I think like Trevor Lawrence wasn't.
But like even Justin Fields' tape would be and what was the difference there?
I don't know because Trevor Lawrence is like very, like
very, twitchy, very, very, very agile. Twitchy, very yeah. Athletic. And also like ran 60 yards on Ohio State's ass in the playoff. Yeah. Like he was Michael Vick out there. So like, I mean, I don't know.
If you were to run an option offense with Trevor Lawrence in college, you could absolutely.
I think you could legitimately make the case that Trevor Lawrence was a bigger run threat in college than Justin Fields was.
He probably ran more. Yeah.
So it's just like, I don't know. Like if you look at the. Just go look at the, I implore you all to go look at the 2022 top quarterback list and then look at them and then like go to 2015 and look at them and tell me if you find a difference.
I want to look that up now to see. I might have just said something that was like horribly wrong about how much Trevor Lawrence ran in college. Can you look up how much Justin Fields ran in college? And I'm going to look
yes.
up Trevor Lawrence.
How about just at Ohio State?
That's fine. He ran a lot. Trevor Lawrence ran in his career at Clemson, ran 231 times for almost 1,000 yards.
Okay. Let's. What do you think Justin Fields is?
In his career? I would say, I would say that Justin Fields ran for like 180 times for 600 yards.
No, it was more than that. He rushed 137 times in 2019, it says. So that's like, what, 10 times a game?
Yeah, but Trevor Lawrence rushed 103 times that year. So it's like he's right there with him.
Yeah, and then in 2020, he just didn't run at all. It was 81.
Yeah, Lawrence was 68.
But he had 10 rushing touchdowns in 2019. And I just like, in my head, I remember that Justin Fields just didn't run it very much. So he ran it a little bit more. And the total yardage here is roughly 800. So like 750-ish.
Trevor Lawrence ran for more.
Yeah. So it's just like what, like, and if Justin Fields, if the dual threat quarterback thing was still a ranking right now in 247 sports, I'd still think that he would be a pro style.
Yeah.
Like, the dude's got he's got the arm of an angel. Like, I mean, I don't know how else to put it. So, it's just like, there aren't very many Braxton Miller-ish type athletes. And maybe Caleb Williams is the closest thing to it. But, like, if you go back and, like, even look at the 2023 class, the top quarterbacks in the country right now, well, I don't know. Like, I haven't watched much tape of Malachi Nelson. Maybe he's exactly what that is. You know, maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. But, like, Nico, I am a light. I don't know how
I'll ever be able to say.
I am a leave. Is that correct?
Yeah.
He's 6'5", 195 pounds. So it's not like he's like a make you miss, juke you out of your underwear type of out of player just based on his body type. You know what I mean? So I don't know.
Yeah, it's actually
I don't even know how we got on this topic, but
yeah. But to get back to the question, I don't think Ohio State's quarterback situation would be drastically different now had Dwayne Haskins
been. Yeah, no, I'm with you.
I wonder if CJ Stroud might have ended up here, but I think no matter what, like Kyle McCord would have been here. But CJ Stroud probably could have been here too, because it's like CJ Stroud would have blown up the same way, and it's like they would have needed a starting quarterback in 2020. Like, I wonder if Dwayne Haskins would have done that, who would have been Ohio State's starting quarterback in 2020?
I wonder if Dwayne Haskins would have stayed for another year. If Tate Martell would be a Heisman winner right now.
No way.
He wouldn't have talked all that shit to Justin Fields at the Rose Bowl.
He just wasn't like, listen, I love Tate Martell. I love Tate Martell, right? I love me.
Come on, buddy. You're supposed to back me up on this, man. That's your guy.
The man was not good enough to be Ohio State starting quarterback. At least in the offense that Ryan Day was running. And Urban's like 26.
Do you think he would have stayed another year, though?
Probably, because he would have been in line. No, I just, like, I don't know. Ryan Day would have gone out and gotten, who knows, he would have gotten that cycle's version of Justin Fields. I don't know who that was. But he would have gotten some dynamite transfer to come be the starter, probably.
Landis, you're supposed to say that Justin Fields' arrival at Ohio State torpedoed what would have been an NFL career at quarterback for Tate Martell.
As much as I would love to say that, I don't want to lie to people.
I'll lie to him. I think it would have been great.
I would have loved to watch it.
But I bet you he would have stayed another year.
I think he would have certainly would have hung around through that spring.
I just don't know. Sometimes I wonder, and like, this isn't. The thing that annoys me about Tate Martell more than anything is everybody on Ohio State's staff evaluated the hell out of that kid. He never lost a high school game. And, like, I don't know what the plan was. The plan that he was supposed to be like Johnny Manziel, is that what the vision was?
I think so.
And it's like, if he is not, like, if he just could not, transfer and torpedo his career all around in 8 different directions and stayed in one place and tried something new, then maybe it would have been different. And I'm not saying being a starting quarterback in the NFL, but like maybe would have been a productive player somewhere at some position.
I'm looking to see like who were the most like high profile guys who drafted or who transferred. Oh, you know who would have been Ohio State's quarterback?
Huh.
JT Daniels.
That would have been great. Somebody just rang my doorbell, Bill. Can you wrap this up?
I'm going to wrap it up. All right, go ahead. It's the person who stole your credit card. Thank you so much for listening to 4 to 6 with A&B. We greatly appreciate it. Thank you for dropping that 5-star review. And again, if you want to leave a 5-star review for us and with a question, we will do our best to get to that question. Ohio State's camps roll on next week. There's one on Monday. There's one on Tuesday. We'll talk about some of the happenings there on the next episode we give you guys next week. And then there's three more after that to wrap out the month. And also, obviously, official visits happening throughout the month as well. So a lot going on with recruiting. A lot going on as we gear up for the 2022 college football season. So thanks, as always, for listening. And we'll talk to you guys next week.